As we walk this journey called life, we seek to find those things that bring joy to our existence. We want to embrace love, desire, and passion through healthy human connections. We want and need to discover meaning to the steps we take daily. The challenges of breaking barriers stir up our spirit as we prove our individual importance. The value of life is precious as we assist others to discover their way. The legacy of our being is found in the donations we make in those outside of ourselves. Success in this journey takes focus and commitment to winning. The victory is in not allowing fractured beliefs of the masses to impact the rules we have made work for ourselves. This is James T. Deshay, the host of Thoughts, Love, and Reflection. We come to you 7 days a week, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m., Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and Sunday at 8:30 Eastern Time. We have a platform for your voice to be heard loud and clear and unfiltered. It is time that we speak for ourselves so that others completely understand the direction we want our country to go in. No longer can we sit on the sidelines and allow others to select our direction. It is time for people of color to use the internet to make sure their voices are heard beyond a couple of streets. Our thoughts and needs and desires need to be heard around the world. And Thoughts, Love, and Reflection is that platform that you can be assured that your thoughts and feelings will be respected and heard without challenge. It is time for us to come together and make sure that we're not left behind. This is your host, James T. Deshay, looking forward to have you call in to the show at 657-383-0309. 7 days a week, we want to be heard loud and clear.
USI never had it so good. 101.1 radio, the best R&B and hip hop music. The Quiet Storm every Friday and Saturday. Talk radio with the best host in the business. Sports talk radio every weekend night with Princess Cooper. Never had it so good radio now on 101.1. And it's 24-7, the world's best radio station.
This is James T. Deshay, the host of Thoughts, Love, and Reflection, brought to you by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network. As always, you know I'm pleased and happy to be here with you, and I'm ready and prepared to have a discussion with you about the things that impact our lives now and in the future. Now, it's important that we stay on top of the things that are going on in our country and make sure that our voices are heard loud and clear. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back and have a discussion about some of the issues of the day.
We got it together, didn't we? we've definitely got our thing together, don't we? Isn't that nice? I mean, really, when you really sit and think about it, isn't it really, really nice? I can easily feel myself slipping and slipping more and more ways. That super world of my own. Nobody but you and me. We've got it together, baby.
I Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network. We have a few articles and stories that I would like us to spend some time talking about. The first one I'm going to select is something that's happening near the Central Florida area dealing with a judge that has come out with some strong and harsh words related to the new selected coach for the University of South Florida. And one of the problems that we have every time that we have people who are on the front line who are out there trying to make a name not only for themselves but for people of color is you're going to have people who from white America who rise up against them, and we need to be prepared to rise up and support these men. So there are a lot of different areas I want to talk about when you are a college coach and what your responsibility is to the college, what your responsibility is to the community, and foremost, what your responsibility is to the young people that you are helping to get their degrees and to become highly successful men and women in our society. Well, this judge came out this week and really stepped out and made some harsh statements against a man who is a well-thought-up coach named Charlie Strong. And Charlie Strong's last job was at Texas, and he did a admirable job at Texas and was asked to leave, and now he has a job at the University of South Florida. He got this job in December, and he has not recruited any of the players that are at the University of South Florida. And the University of South Florida is trying desperately to move to the next level. But regrettably, two of their players find themselves in trouble. And not for minor offenses, but the question has to be asked is, Charlie just got the job in December. So he did not recruit these boys, and he is just getting to the point where he's implementing his way of doing things into the school system. And yet you have a judge that came out and suggested that he should rethink if he's fit for a job after two of his boys has gone out and did some things that were criminal. She suggested she had never been embarrassed of her alumni school before this time. And again, her statements were taken out against not the previous coach, who would have been the coach that recruited the players, but of the new coach, suggesting that she was embarrassed and ashamed. Now, we have to ask ourselves, is she embarrassed and ashamed because he happens to be an African-American coach? Why would she suggest someone who just got the job in December should already have some solutions to the problems that had to exist long before he got there? And we have to be ready and prepared to put into the airwaves that we're not going to tolerate people creating adverse environments for people we know that are good men and who are taking on large responsibility. And when she suggests that he is not monitoring his players well enough, we have to ask ourselves, can any coach monitor over 100 players in a way that can make sure that none of them ever get in trouble? And should he be responsible for every bad mistake that his players make? So, D, I'm going to go to you first and say, here we have a situation where an African-American man is leaving a job in Texas. He is quickly snatched up by the University of South Florida in December and is now being held accountable by a judge openly, and her statements have gone viral. You know, what should be our response to this judge and to the community related to the way she spoke about this man?
Good evening, James, and Super Sunday to everybody. Nice to be on the show again tonight. James, I'm not familiar with the case, but I got a couple of questions I want to ask you so I can give a valid response to your questioning. All right. Did the infractions happen during the time that the coach arrived there at the university, or was it before?
Well, one of them happened before, and one happened, you know, again, he didn't get the job until December. And so,
okay,
you know, he is just getting to the school, so he's been at the school less than 5 months, and he didn't recruit any of these players. One of them is a sexual assault, and the other one is a incident of road rage dealing with a firearm. So
okay,
these two things happen in close proximity of each other and shortly after he was hired.
Okay. Now, the second part of my question is, what is she suggesting that he do?
Well, she is suggesting, is he fit to be the leader of the school football team if these are the kind of behaviors that these two individuals are displaying? And certainly this man has been known for being a strong disciplinarian when he was at Texas. And my question is, has he been long enough to introduce his way of discipline, or can you hold him accountable for people he didn't even recruit? And so
okay,
my thing is the man just got hired, and the two incidents are very unfortunate, but should he be held accountable for them at this stage of his career?
All right. Let me say this. Him having to recruit either of the boys really has nothing to do with it. Even though it's not his recruitment, that's not the point. That's not the case. The case is that they are there at the time of him coming in, and they reflect, their action reflects the university. Okay. Now, what I would do if I was in a position such as his, and if I value the job for one, if I value the position for two, and if I value the fact that I'm coming in as a black person, being a beacon and a lighthouse, if you will, for other persons coming behind me as to what you can do if you stay the straight and narrow, and fourthly, knowing that everybody is watching you. All right. So with all of that on the table, there is no room for trying to appease people of color in that manner. Because when it comes down to young people and young football players, young athletes, for one, they have a tendency to overlook the fact that you are a person in position and you are there to show the world that you're there to do a job. They will actually embarrass you while you're trying to show some type of solidarity towards them. They don't know the meaning of the word, first of all. So they will embarrass him. So I'm in agreement with the lady, with the judge, if she's suggesting that he should come in hitting the ground running and straighten the ship up. And that's right, I am. Because you cannot bet the farm that these young people, that young athletes, we talking about sexual assault? Yes. Come in. I would actually bench the person. I don't care. I don't care if he's a star player on the team. I would make an example out of him. I would. That's right.
Well, let me just tell you, because I just read it. He kicked one off the team, and he suspended the other one after his arrest. So now he has done some of the things that you have suggested. But the issue becomes overall is, you know, you recruit players and you want your players to behave in the best possible situation. And but what we're asking a coach to do is to be fully responsible for his team 24/7. And mind you, they are with him less time than, I mean, he is not even in a position to have them practice yet. You know, he came in December, so they has not, you know, they'll have a spring practice pretty soon, or may have already had their spring practice. But the season doesn't start until August. So he is having off-duty practices with them or weight training with them, but he has not gotten as involved in with them as he will be in the next upcoming month. And so we're asking someone who's just getting started whether or not he should be accountable for these boys and whether or not this judge went kind of overboard suggesting she is embarrassed with her school. And so this is the only incident that has taken place over the lifetime of the University of South Florida having a football team. George, what are your thoughts about how we you were going to say something, D? D, did
hello,
you have
everybody.
Another comment? Okay, go ahead, George.
And D, I was laughing for the reason you had it that you said that a lot of them don't even know what that means. I agree with D, and I agree wholeheartedly, regardless how long the coach has been there. When he come in as a coach, you come in and they know what the ground rules are. Most teams, most professional teams, most school teams, college level, they are a team, and they decide how. The type of demeanor that they're going to carry on and what they vote on whether or not they will keep that person on a team as a team, you see. So my thing is for this coach coming in there, regardless whether he's there 2 months or 3 months, he met with that whole team. And when you meet with the team, you know, you want to lay it out and let them know what you expect and what your expectations are. Bottom line is that when he messed up the kid, and according to the coach, what he stood for, and also what the whole team probably decided on, he got to go. Because one person is making the team. There's no different, like, let's take the NFL, that Hernandez guy. What do you think? New England disowned him. Nowhere. They have no place for you in their society, within their organization. And it's no different on a college level. I mean, these thugs, as D would call them, most of them are with these thug-like personalities. You come in, you got to change your program because, number one, if you're trying to go professional, no one's going to pick you up. These players are sick of the random off and what that other guy, he made so much care on the TOs and the whole bit. They're not taking those type of young men no more. You got to come in and you got to show that you are mature enough to be able to handle it. So what you do outside the arena and outside that the college life is reflecting on who you are 24/7. When my son went to Nebraska, they are Cornhusker. They know a Cornhusker. You did that uniform. When you wear that uniform, when you wear that red and white, or when you go out in the public, they know who you are. So you got to carry yourself. When you carry yourself out there in the public, you carrying that university on your back. So, you know, that's what I feel exactly the way D feels about it. Sorry.
Well, I understand your position. And I appreciate, you know, the stance that you're taking and understand that he did take a stance against these two boys, suspending one and kicking one off the team. But where I think the judge went too far, if you got a job in December, you didn't recruit any of the present boys that are on the team, and to suggest that you may be unfit for your job because what two young men did shortly after you arrived is going too far. You know what I mean? You can't implement your will on a group of people within 2 or 3 months. It takes time for you to put in the changes you want to make to the foundation of what the team was before you got there. And you got to allow time to make those adjustments.
But the changes you're talking about are not physical changes. These are changes for as far as demeanor and personalities. Those are things that doesn't even take a week or 5 weeks or 5 months to put in place.
No, these people have had their mentality for a lifetime. When someone is 19 or 20 years old, they didn't decide that they were going to be bad in 2 or 3 days. And so you have to show them that a business as usual. You have to. That's going to take a little. Somebody's going to be made. What they call made an example of. Anytime you go into a new situation, you're going to have to make an example of somebody because they're going people who are going to believe you just talking. And so these two young men might be the ones who are being made an example of. But I'm saying, those of us who are on the outside shouldn't jump to the determination that somebody is not fit for their job. So, you know, think about across the country how many football players have acted unlike what the coach would want them to act like. This is not a new phenomenon.
Right. It's nothing new.
And so and we have to give this man an opportunity to display the kind of leadership and give him time to implement his leadership before we suggest that he's unfit for the job.
Let me clear myself up a little bit. If she was suggesting that he is solely responsible for their actions, I think that was a bit. That was a bit extreme for her to say that. But the fact is that, you know, I'm sure and he should be holding regular team meetings. And in these team meetings, the groundwork and the expectations of them should be set in stone. So for her to say that you are solely responsible and you are unfit to be the coach because, you know, it seemed like that from what you're saying, she haven't given them a chance to rectify the situation. Surely that's unfair and unbalanced. But the fact that you know, you can't watch these kids. You know, most people don't even know where the teenagers are half the time at home. So it's kind of hard to watch them. but you can let them know what your expectations are. And let them know that if you are unbecoming of the expectation, then the consequences would be very strong. And if you if you value your position on the team, then you know we suggest that you behave yourself. So that's my position.
True. Mm-hmm. Okay. 1958. Give us your name and where you're calling from.
I'm Good afternoon, this is Kathy calling from California.
Oh, hi, Kathy. How you doing?
Hey, how's everybody?
Hi, Kathy.
Hi, George.
See, I forget.
Hi, Andre. Hi, G.
Kathy, trying to trick you, man.
I missed that. She got another number on here. Listen, Kathy, before we go on break, I know you kind of caught a quick little bit of that. We're dealing with a coach from Texas who's now moved to the University of South Florida, and two of his boys got in some trouble, and a judge whipping of him has gone viral, suggesting that he's not fit for the job because one of his boys has done a sexual assault, and the other one was a part of a road rage incident that had guns involved. And the man only got hired in December. And so I'm suggesting that he's not giving this man enough time to implement his discipline, even though he has kicked one ball off the team and suspended the other one. It's not giving him enough time to have his way of doing things fully implemented.
You're asking me the question, James?
Hey, I'm kind of asking you, can we allow this judge, who is a white female, to blast this man in this fashion without him being given an opportunity to fully implement his plan and his will on this team before his leadership is called into question?
Absolutely not. I don't think he should be responsible because, like you said, he just started in December. He's really just now getting a feel of who everybody is on the team. And as far as the judge, they need to do some protesting over in whatever state that is, so that they can get her taken off of the bench, because she's making judgment over something that she probably haven't even really looked into or tried to see why this happened or how long this guy has actually been the coach. So he should not be responsible for that.
Yeah, and some people don't know. I want to share with all of you. I played college football, and I've been on a team that had over 100 players. And I can tell you that Willie Jeffries was my coach. Willie Jeffries coached me for one season, and that one season he coached me, when we first got there, you had a curfew. And the other coaches would have to, he was the head coach, so he wasn't going to check the rooms. The assistant coaches went to check the rooms. So you had to be in your room at 11 o'clock. Now, when Jeffries was there, everybody beat it to their room by 11 o'clock. And those coaches was there going through those rooms, going through those dormitories, knocking on everybody's door with their pad and pencils, checking on whether or not you were there. And if you were not there, you had to be down at the field at 6 in the morning calling what we call wiping up the dew. That means that you did rolls on the ground 200 yards, wiping the dew off the football field because you were late going to your dorm. After Jeffries left my sophomore year, those coaches didn't want to do it. So they didn't come to check the rooms. So now you know that them guys were out after 11 o'clock because that was just, if you ain't got nobody checking, you're going to do what you want to do. So it takes a lot of discipline and a lot of work to keep 100-plus men in check, 100-plus young men in check, when you're trying to control their behaviors, and you got to have the right man for the job to do that. But you got to give that man time to impose his will on the team. And I think this man is going to be an outstanding fit. I look forward to him. He did a great job in Texas. Like all big schools, it's about what have you done for me lately? And so he didn't get them to the national championship, and they chose to replace him. But the University of South Florida is trying to get to the next level, and they have selected an outstanding coach to assist them to get to that next level. But he has to be given an opportunity to implement his will on that team. Regina, what are your thoughts about this judge lambasting Charles Strong from the bench in regard to two players that have done criminal activities and suggesting that he's not fit to be the coach of this predominantly white school?
Well, good evening. And somebody has had their whisper in that judge's ear for him to come out as strong as he did. I'm not sure if you knew, but Charlie Strong was a phenomenal assistant coach at the University of South Carolina for a number of years. And wherever he went highly recommended. And we hated to lose him. So that's the same issue. You're never going to be able to do enough if you are in the minority, but you have authority. You'll never be able to do enough. So I just want him to hold his head up and keep being the phenomenal person that he is.
And that's one of the things they've said and suggested across the country is that this man was going to be picked up fast because of who he is, and what he brings to the table. Because you're right, he has a phenomenal resume, and he's been a strong coach everywhere he went. But this statement from the bench, and it was a white female who is a alumni of the University of South Florida, suggesting that she is now embarrassed by her school and this display of criminal behavior, and went on to suggest that Charles Strong was not possibly the right fit for the school if he was already running into these issues. And again, he did not recruit any of these young boys, and so his mark has not yet been made on this school. We're going to take a short break and come back and continue our discussion.
Need a girl to stay. I want
This is James T. Deshay, the host of Thoughts, Love, and Reflection, brought to you by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network. You know, I want to share, just go on record sharing something with you guys. Being that I had the experience of being on a football team and how volatile a group of football players can be, we have to realize that most football players grow up being very aggressive and enjoying the thrill of hitting people and enjoying the game. You know, in a lot of aspects, I came from a professional. My mother was a professional and my father was professional, and they got me involved in a lot of different things and tried to get me to be an overall decent person. And so some of my aggressive behavior was kind of reduced by the environment that I grew up in. But I played football with guys from Jacksonville, Florida, Miami, Florida, Melbourne, Florida, and throughout Florida and in South Carolina. And I can tell you, when it came to playing football, those guys were extremely aggressive. And a lot of them came from a lot of different type of environment. And when you get 100-plus people from all these different environments, you're going to have some of them that did not have the same type of upbringing and don't not fully understand what they're getting from the school that they're attending or what their college education can mean to them. It was very important for me not to get kicked out of school because I knew what would be the result if I went back home and got kicked out of school for some reason. But a lot of these young men weren't even encouraged to go to college. They were encouraged by their coaches, encouraged by their classmates, but may not have been encouraged by their home environment. So, George, we have to be really mindful when coaches bring in these different players from all different environments. We don't want to suggest, oh, we're not going to bring any thugs into this school. We're not going to bring, because then you're keeping out some success stories. So you really need coaches to go down and talk to players, talk to their parents, and see who, you know, if it's worth trying to survive, you know, bring a person who's in a bad situation to a good situation and see if he can get success. Because across our nation, we have a lot of football players who didn't come from perfect situations.
Well, that's true, too. But, you know, I know that most universities do not have nothing in place where they're going to teach most athletes what they should know and how they should conduct and handle themselves coming into the fold. Secondly, I think to be able to have such an opportunity, that alone should let the one who's been underprivileged, like you say, come from those type of neighborhoods or those type of areas. That alone, to me, would put me in the right mindset that I know that I have to walk the toll in order to get to what I want to be, and that is to point A. You're right about some of the personalities or whatever, but I think our young people sometimes they really just don't understand it once they get into those type of position and they don't be appreciative as to how lucky they are, to be honest with you, because you got those kids that you're talking about, those same kids from some of those same neighborhoods. They're not as talented, but if they had that opportunity, I guarantee you they would play twice as hard or four times as hard as the one who just is a sure natural that's coming in the door, but is cocky as hell and he's out of control.
Go ahead. Go ahead and finish yours.
No, no, go ahead. You can go on to D, but that's all I had.
What D, you and I realize that the aggressiveness that is on the football field can't always be contained in the game. That some of that aggressiveness is going to be walking around on campus. So in one instance where the coach wants his players to be very aggressive and playing hard and giving 100%, you can't just contain that to the football field. And so it's not as easy as people think about just, you know, once you release that genie out of the bottle, it's not going to stay in the bottle when he's in the classroom at all times.
You know, I agree with you with that. You know, for far too long, even at the high school level, the coaches and teachers that really embrace the school spirit of said high school, they have shown to be favorable to the athletic ability of the player as opposed as his academic requirements and responsiveness when it comes to what he has to offer the school. In other words, they have a tendency to lean toward his athleticism as opposed to anything else. It seems like nothing else seems to matter. Terrell Owens was what I think it was Ms. Joyce was trying to think of, was the other player that seems to have had issues throughout high school and college and up into the pros. And that's a pattern. You know, I went to school in Atlanta, and we had a football player that was ambidextrous. He could throw with both his left hand and his right hand. He could throw 60 yards with the right hand and 40 yards to the left. So he was a double threat in that way. And he was recruited by the University of Georgia. Well, once he got there, it was quickly found out that his grades had been padded and that he was not really academically shouldn't have been in college. And Buck Ballou took his place on the football field. You all probably heard of him. And so the thing is that Terrell Owens said it pretty well best, that, you know, that his grandmother kind of catered to him and he took advantage of all situations, even to the pros. But the real point is that, you know, we were talking about last night about how can we start making a difference or what is it that we should do to try to make a difference. And the difference is to be made at on the ground level, which is stop accepting everything as being okay. So,
That's right.
You just can't do it. You know, even if the school has to suffer, you can take Penn State as an example. Joe Paterno pushed everything under the rug at the expense of Penn State going down in history as probably one of the winningest football teams in history. In doing so, all the dirt that was going on around that campus had been pushed back until it surfaced. Then when it all came out, it probably led to his death. You know, he probably just didn't feel like living no more with the way he went out dishonored and all. But so we just got to take a stand. If we don't take a stand, you know that people will take advantage of you. And so we just have to take a stand, even at the expense of not being on a winning team season after season after season.
Cassie, let me just ask you, you aware and may be aware of Ray Lewis and a number of other players who, you know, we just had a young man commit suicide. There are going to be people who can't be controlled. You look at Ray Lewis and now he's changed and he's become a very religious individual. And then you have another player who had the same opportunity who was a bad boy who ended up possibly murdering people and committing suicide in jail. So you don't know who which one is going to make the right decision. But you've got to give both of them an opportunity, don't you?
Absolutely. And as you guys were talking, I was just thinking about, you know, maybe they need to put something in place where they mentor these guys for at least a year so that they can kind of walk them through this new journey that they're going in, because they get all this money, and if they don't have any type of training on how to prepare for life or the wealth that they are receiving, the people that are going to be coming in their path, and forgetting their past, you know, because they have a new opportunity that's been presented to them, then we're going to continue to see these type of things. So hopefully they are putting something in place, you know, because it's happening a lot, and some we hear about and some we don't hear about. But, yeah, each one deserves the opportunity. I was looking at Steve Harvey the other day, and he has this young man on his show who mother and father were on drugs. It was two brothers, and the guy said he knew that this guy was going to be some kind of superstar, but because he didn't have anybody in his life to guide him and show him, then he was headed down that path. So he was the guy was a mentor, so he reached out to the older brother, but the older brother was not interested in anyone mentoring him. He just wanted to be in the streets and doing everything he was doing. But he said, hey, if you can go and get my little brother, he said, I would really appreciate that. And that's what the man did. He went and got the younger brother. He adopted him, and he mentored him. And this guy went to the pros, and the guy was on stage, and he had tears in his eyes. He said that if it had not been for this man being in his life and showing him what a real man is, he would probably be dead. So that's why I say we need mentors in these type of things, you know, to show these kids that you know there's greatness in you, you know, but you have to choose to do the right thing to continue on in that greatness.
Amen.
And that is what we hope Charles Strong is able to do, but we got to give him some time to implement his abilities to govern these young men, and we can't just decide that we just want the goody-two-shoes boys out of the community, because every Boy Scout is not going to be perfect either. You know, you can select all the Boy Scouts, but some of them are going to be rapists as well. So, Regina, we need to give everybody an opportunity and try to get beyond their outer demeanor and give them an opportunity to participate in college sports with the dream of going further. And people like Charles need the opportunity and the time to make sure that his way of doing things might work.
Yes. You're very right. We have to give everybody a chance, but we also have to let these young men understand that, yes, you're being given a chance, and you have to conform, you have to obey, you have to do something that has been hard for you to do during your lifetime if you have any sort of bad anything on your record. That is, you've got to obey authority, and that's what many of our people who are in trouble have had issues with, obeying authority. Our football coach here at the University, I'm sorry, basketball coach here at the University of South Carolina had an issue with his boys. Much like Charlie Strong, he came in as a first-year coach, and these young men were not young men. He had selected. Every time he would not agree with just going and getting them out of jail when they got into trouble or anything like that, the coach would get the bad rap. But he hung in there. and he hung in there, and he molded those young men. And this year, they got to the Final Four. Dawn Staley, she was so tough. Some of those girls that people just really loved, when they disobeyed, she said, "You have to obey rules." And she would leave them there at that school and go and play ball wherever their game was. They ended up getting, you know, becoming the national champions. So we've got to let these young people understand that they've got to obey.
And we want them to understand that discipline, but we have to be aware that those same people we want to be aggressive and relentless, that is a part of their spirit. And you can't, you know, you have to be, you can't break their spirit completely. You have to find a way to help them learn how to contain their spirit so that their ability to play is not affected. Again, I'm telling you that some of these guys just are relentless. You know, when you see that linebacker, you say he is relentless, and he's going after, you know, he's going after that running back. Well, understand, if somebody says something out of place to him, he's going to be relentless in the street. You see what I'm saying? So
well, James,
you have to understand, you have to learn how to work with him to contain that spirit so that he doesn't release it in the wrong place.
That's not true, James. My son was a linebacker in the NFL, and that's not true. I'm not going to agree with that one.
I'm telling you.
James, do you remember that? I'm saying to you,
Joyce, that you may have been the parent that helped him understand where to display it. But if you have not had any control over it all of your life, and then you go somewhere and somebody says, "Okay, I want you to display this on the football field, but not in the street," that's where the difference comes. You're right. I mean, at home, I have very disciplinary parents, but everybody don't have disciplinary parents.
James, have you ever heard the saying, and I know you have, you got to know when to hold them, and you got to know when to fold them.
I'm very much aware of it, yes.
They've got to know how to do that. They've got to know how to code switch. They've got to know when their behavior is beneficial to them. And they've got to be able to say, now, is this beneficial to me? Now, it is my choice. What am I going to do? They have to know how to think. And here we go back to my word, think and make choices. If it's not going to be beneficial, they need to keep it going, keep it rolling, keep on walking.
And always weigh the consequences.
And Regina, you're right, but I want to ask you to evaluate when we're so closely putting athletes under the microscope, we realize that those same schools are full of young people who are not playing sports, who are making some of the biggest mistakes in their lives during their early adult lives. And so we can't lose sight of the fact that this is a unique period of time that these young people happen to be in, but they just happen to be football players as well. Dee, what is your thought about understanding that these guys are in the first phase of adulthood, and we're asking them to be very aggressive on the football field, but we want them to be like church mouses outside of the sports arena?
Well, I understand that the aggressiveness is like the gladiator spirit that we expect for that type of sport to have. But we have to be careful in trying to analyze the differences between aggression on the field and imposing your will on a person off the field. We're talking about a rape charge and also road rage and road rage is the other charge. and being aggressive with a weapon in the process of. So, you know, yeah, we want the gladiator spirit on the field, but off the field, you can't impose your will on people. And I think it's important that we tell these young gladiators coming in that, you know, we want your spirit on the field, but we're going to hold you to a high standard off the field. And if you violate all our policies, you could very well be expelled from the school or kicked off the professional team, if that be the case. So I think those are priorities, and that protocol should be held up. And that's my point on that. That's my stand on that.
And you're right. I really appreciate what you're saying, and I know that that's true. You know, but we have to realize that we're dealing with young adults who don't always have the ability to stay on top of their emotions. We have a lot of athletes who've gone through some issues, and we thank God they were able to get through it. I can tell you that Jameis Winston, I really appreciate and hope that he can get beyond what happened at Florida State. And but there are some people who were kicked out of school and kicked off the team since he went through what he went through. And so everybody don't get the right opportunity, the right chance to get through because the – you know, they're treated with a very heavy hand. And so we have to realize, you know, how heavy a hand do we want to deal with these young people? And again, I use Ray Lewis and what happened to him and how his world could have been different if we wouldn't have given him some slack.
Hey, let me say real quick about Lewis. That incident happened in Atlanta, and Ray Lewis had the aggressive spirit that you're talking about. You can see that during his introduction of every game. But what happened in his case? He tried to go back to the homeboy neighborhood and the people that he knew, and that's a bad thing to do, especially when you have arrived and you have accomplish your goals in life. You can take the boy out the hood, but you can't take the hood out the boy. And so he tried to go back to the hood to appease the fellas that he went to school with. In the club, one of the guys that he was with hit another guy over the head with a Dom Perignon bottle and killed him. And Ray came in with these guys, and he tried to usher them out into his limousine to get away. And that's how he got in trouble. But it could have been very well different because Johnny Cochran explained it. The color of justice is green. And it had not Ray Lewis had the pockets that he did have at the time, he could have very well went to prison for obstruction.
You're right.
Mm-hmm.
George, let me ask you, what do you think some of the things that you implemented or that was involved in your son's life that made sure that he didn't go down a wrong road?
Well, to be honest with you, my oldest son, who was a professional football player, his dad was a professional football player for the Vikings. So he played a crucial role. And my son looked at some of the things that by observation, and that made him channel things differently as to how he saw that whole NFL world, that whole football type of status. He in the process of writing a book. It's in publication now, and it's his life story, and it's called Iron Will. And when that's published, it tells a lot about. He said he wished he had the knowledge of what he knows now, how to carry yourself, how to choose a coach, how to prepare yourself, what questions to ask, how to choose an agent, all those facts of life that kids did not have that he was lucky enough, but he learned the hard way some of the issues too. But as far as he knew what you have to do, it's just It's just how we are raised. You know, we know what our job is. You know what you better do, what you better not do. You know you shouldn't be getting in trouble. You yourself said it, that you knew what you had to do when you went to college, that you knew that you better not get in trouble. Those are the ground rules. So it's all about home training. It's about your home foundation, what you demand of your child, of your sibling. When my son went off to medical school, he wanted to know what is plan B in case plan A don't work. There is no plan B. You took plan A, B, and C with you. So when you go to college, you better come out of there with a stethoscope around your neck and a piece of paper in your hand. That's what it's all about. So once you put these obligations and responsibilities as to what is expected, I think, you know, that's just the way it is. And that's what colleges should do. Like Kathy said, that there should be some type of training, some type of teaching, and let those kids know from the jump street what is demanded. And it has to be on the ground level, too. Start at high school, really in elementary, because that's where you have start having them out on the field looking towards the future. So you have to let them know not only does good playing skills goes along with that, but is good citizenship goes along with that as well. So, you know, once we instill to them what good citizenship is all about, I think that is solving half the problem.
And, Joyce, I really agree with you. And it's amazing that you said what you said in about him having, you know, you suggesting that there is no plan B. Because, you see, that's what I'm talking about. That's what you have to realize. I'm going to share a story with you guys again. When I got ready to go play college football and leave my home for the first time for an extended period of time, I don't know what it was, but I felt sick. And I don't know if I had ate something that made me feel sick. I have no idea. But I'm telling you that my mom took me to the bus station sick. And she took me to the bus station, and she told those boys, when she got to the bus station, she found some boys from South Florida, and she told them, she said, look, he going to football practice just like y'all. Make sure he gets on the bus, and y'all watch after him all the way to South Carolina. And we ain't have no cell phones then. And so me being sick ain't had nothing to do with the fact I had to be in school that morning and need to be on that football field ready to go to those meetings. And so she got me on that bus late that night. We rolled all night. I think it was like 9 or 10 that night we got on that bus. And one of the things she told me before I went to college, she told me, you know you can't come home without a degree, right? You know what I'm saying? So, you know, that is the kind of upbringing some people have, but there are a lot of people who don't have that kind of upbringing, but we cannot deny them an opportunity to have a chance because we can't allow their parents' shortcomings to be their shortcomings. Right, Kathy? We got to give kids an opportunity who may not have been brought up in a perfect environment.
And you know what, it's not only the parents' outcoming, you know, it's sometimes kids just do things. It's a circle of life that we all go through. We all go through that stage where we are given choices to do right or to do wrong. And sometimes we just choose to do wrong, you know. I just think about my siblings, each and every one of us. When we all were brought up under, you know, my mother giving us rules, what to do, what not to do, being home at this time, and, you know, chores, education is most important. We had a stepdad. I mean, she was on it. Some of us chose, okay, to be good all the time, and then some of us chose to be bad. But it wasn't because she did not tell us, but it was the choice that we made. But at a certain time, maturity stepped in on most of us. And, you know, we learn from that. And to saying that, to say that not all parents are not active and are not present in their children's lives, that determines them to do right or to do wrong. It's a circle of life that we go in. Some of us make it out and some of us don't. But again, like you said, we all should be given the choice and a chance to do the right thing. And that's why, I mean, I'm really for those mentors, those men that want to mentor, not only men but girls as well, because it's needed, especially now, because it's totally different from when I was growing up, you know, not as far as the mentors, but the things that the kids do now, the disrespect and how they don't listen to their parents and the parents allowing them, you know, to say anything to them in front of, you know, people. If I even looked it like I was going to say something back to my mother or disagree to her, her hand would be inside of my mouth, you know. And same thing with my kids. There's no disrespect there, you know. If I tell them something, even though they don't agree with it, they're going to do it anyway because I'm their mom, and that's the respect that they have. But this generation, that's why we got to keep praying for them, you know. The disrespect is really present. So we need mentors. We need people to walk aside of these kids, to talk to them, to let them know that, you know, that they can overcome. And it's not as bad as they think it is. So, yes.
Regina, what are your thoughts in regards to us being able to just walk through this maze of trying to save kids and which kids to pick for these opportunities, and not just thinking that, you know, we're not going to pick the thugs, we're just going to pick the good kids?
Well, I think I am thinking that we have to give them a chance, give everybody a chance. We have Benedict College here, and the president of Benedict, and he's retiring this year, he's taking a lot of flack on going out and getting, recruiting students, not just student athletes, but students who may have had criminal records, who may have walked around with their pants hanging down. And his motto was, send them to me as they are, and I will release them back to you a changed person. So he wasn't looking for only those that were acceptable by society. He was looking for those who weren't acceptable by society. Now, comparing what he did as a college president to what the coaches are doing, if you're going to get these young men, don't just leave them out there to become failures. They don't do because they haven't been taught to do. Make sure they have a mentor with them daily, someone who's putting something positive in their ears daily to help them. But just don't sit them out there and then think they're supposed to do right. Where are they going to learn right from?
You're right. We're going to take our final break and come back, and I want you doing this break to be coming up with your final thought, and we'll be right back.
You must understand the touch of your hand. My folks react that it's only the thrill of boy meeting girl while the zest attracts. It's physical, only logical. You must try to ignore that it means more than. Who needs a heart when a heart can be
I've got cause to be. There's a name for it. There's a phrase that fits. But whatever the reason, you do it for me. Oh, what's love got to do? Got to do it.
What we need to do also is that, like Kathy said, we need to ask these institutions as far as we're giving you our kids to help your university and to bring in income for your university. So what are you promising us in return for that? We're asking of you for these universities, and we're going to make good athletes. But we also would like for you to make good citizens for them too, mentors to go out and teach others, you know, right from wrong. So we should start demanding something of them too, as much as they're demanding of our kids their talent.
All right, you're so right. Kathy, your final thought for today?
I think we need to begin to write letters to these places that are showing racism against our people. You know, like you talked about the man who is being reprimanded because of two young men that did something wrong, and he hadn't even had a chance to prove himself. I think we, meaning on the show, when this happens, we need to write letters, even if it says we don't agree with what's going on, because until we begin to let the people truly know that we are for the people that they're doing wrong, it's going to continue to go on. And it only takes two people. You know, the Bible said where two agree as in touching anything, that God is in the midst. So I think we need to start something different. Think about it.
I will, you know, that's a good thing. And I'll seek to see where we can send letters of support to the University of South Florida to let them know that that judge's opinion is not the only opinion that exists out here. And I tell you what, I'll make sure that I'll have that address and information tomorrow and make sure I share it on the show. Regina, what is your final thought for today?
Well, I not only think that we should, you know, send letters
to say what we feel about the opinions that have been said about Coach Strong, but also let them know what we're expecting out of them when we send our children to them. An excellent example of that is Asia Wilson's parents. And even though Asia was considered a college student, it was nothing for her mother to get on that phone and call and let them know what the family expected from the University of South Carolina when it came to the handling of their child that they were sending. So, you know, we've got to hold the universities accountable also.
All right, you're so right. I want to thank you all for your continued support. It was an outstanding show for us to talk about the things that we need to do to support the people that are on the front lines of our institutions and are out there trying to make good things happen. And we want to continue to support young people who come from all kinds of different backgrounds to let them know that we want to make sure that everybody has a chance if they want to change their behavior and live the kind of lifestyle that our universities demand. I want to thank all of you, and I'll see you tomorrow on Thoughts, Love, and Reflection at 8 p.m. tomorrow. Take care, everybody.
Wait a minute, this is too deep. I gotta change the station so I